I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Ponco Chicken. The new Atlanta restaurant thrives off of a unique spin on Japanese and Western cuisine and is already racking up the awards, winning best-selling taste in the Taste of Atlanta Awards both in 2017 and 2018. So if you're in the Metro Atlanta area and are wanting to try something new and good and delicious, go to Ponco Chicken today and tell them that I sent you over. You'll be glad you did, I promise. Ponco Chicken, where eats meets West.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. It's Monday night, and I have one of my favorite NFL Twitter people, one of the guys that I check his timeline every day to see what he's saying, because his timeline is always interesting on Twitter.com. It's Benjamin Albright. Ben, good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. You fight the good fight. You're back on it every day. And I appreciate guys like you, because I don't think I could do it.
I don't know if I fight the good fight, but I fight the fight. That may be worse.
I don't know. I mean, you're active. You're on Twitter. You're on Twitter a lot. You break news. Like, you're just you're in the minutia. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to do something like that.
I try to. I guess I try to do my best to be interactive. I feel like if you're going to do this, you know, the thing about doing this is that you're going to have to be interactive. You know, people have questions, and, you know, what are you doing if you're not out there interacting with those people who have questions? That's the whole point of getting into this to begin with, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. The Twitter medium, I've gone back and forth on this. It's just, do you feel like what I feel whenever I send off a tweet where you just almost immediately want to delete it, and you're like, do I need to tweet this out in the world? Does the world need to know this? Do I have to unleash this take on Twitter? I don't like seeing any of my, like, non-promoted or self-promotion tweets ever. It always gives me, like, it makes me squirm, and I'm just like, ugh, gross. But I don't know. Maybe I'm alone there.
Well, self-promotion is a part of, you know, doing what you do. I mean, the premise that we have something that's important to say or needs to be said, or that somebody needs to hear what we have to say is inherently arrogant to begin with. So the idea that self-promotion or promoting that idea, which is the underlying, you know, idea behind putting stuff like this out there to begin with, the idea that self-promotion would be gross or bad is inherently opposite to what, you know, the premise of having this stuff to begin with is.
Yeah, I would agree. But, you know, it's our world. It is weird to just know. I was talking to somebody about this a couple days ago, but it's kind of, I don't know if you feel like this, but we're, now that we're in this world and we're just kind of entrenched in this weird sphere, are we stuck? Is there, do you ever just think about, like, social media is just going to be a part of our lives forever because we just need these mediums to keep doing what we want to do? That it's kind of a scary thought to just know that you will always need stuff like this to keep it going.
I don't know. I think that newspaper writers of old used to think that that was what was entrenched. You know, and that was nobody's communication improves, and, you know, that now it's improved and will evolve as it always does. I think that social media is still in its infancy. So I think that, you know, we do take the good with the bad. There are moments where it can be a great tool, and there are moments where you're just tired of it and want to turn it off forever. So, and I've been both sides of that coin for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk some football, because you are one of my favorite football guys, and I want to pick your brain on some offseason stuff. Right now, there's still a lot of work to be done. I believe the Colts still have $90 billion in cap room, so we'll have to see what they end up doing. But who is winning free agency right now for you? Who has stood out to you where you're like, ooh, I really like what they have done? Because that flipped, right, the last couple of years, where it used to be where teams were dumb for splurging in free agency, and then the Jaguars splurge, and then it's this huge thing where it changes the complete trajectory of their team, and it turns out free agency is actually good. It seems like we go back and forth on this depending on what happens. And just like the dream team stuff feels like forever ago. And I don't know. I think it's somewhere in the middle probably. But who right now for you stands out as like, I like this. I like what they're doing.
Well, I think there's several teams that kind of fit that parameter. I think that if you're going to go out and invest in free agency, it says two things. You know, it says one, that you either have a lot of holes to fill, thus your need to go out of free agency, or you're trying to push all in to move ahead for a Super Bowl run. Ideally, a situation where you're spending largely in free agency would be a precursor of both, but I think we all know that if you're buying heavily at free agency, that generally means you don't have a roster that was ready to compete before you did that. So, I guess it depends. If you're spending a lot of dollars, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. You need to look at Cleveland. Their team seems to spend a lot of money. They were a decent team last year. They're going to be a lot better this coming season. So I think that, if you look, you probably got to put them at the top of the board. But one thing I didn't like them doing was trading away Kevin Zeitler. I felt like that was a huge mistake. They had one of the best interior lines in football the last 2 years. Zeitler was a big part of that. I think moving on from him is an attempt to get Austin Corbett in there to get him some more play time. But, I was just concerned that Baker going into his second year, are you sure that weakening the offensive line is the direction to go? So ultimately, they come away with a lot of great players in Cleveland. So I think everybody's probably going to peg them number one as a winner in free agency.
Interesting. See, I think they still, I don't know, because it seems like it's hard to put them as a winner of free agency. And also they traded for OBJ, and like a lot of their stuff is through trades and all the draft capital that they had from Sashi Brown. But like, I don't know. I don't feel like I would peg them as like a free agency winner, because they're a draft winner. Like Denzel Ward, Myles Garrett, Baker Mayfield. You go up and down the list. Like, the reason that I think we're all really high on the Browns right now is just what they've done in the draft the last couple of years. But
this free agent period, they acquired Olivier Vernon. They added, obviously they added OBJ. I think they, noticed that. So I think that, like I said, in terms of big pieces, that seems to be, kind of a predicate. Now, whether they have acquired them by trade or whatever, I assume you meant the free agent period in and of itself.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of it's murky to say the least. It's like, how do most people evaluate free agency? Does that include trades and everything? I guess, yeah, I don't know. I guess you probably should include everything. So I guess that's fair. I don't know. It should be interesting. I mean, it's weird that we're already here where the Browns are now the favorites in the AFC North. This happened very fast. I think we expected it based on we expected it at some point for them to keep moving in this direction with Baker in that core. But the Steelers just imploding, the Ravens still having some question marks with Lamar Jackson, and then the Bengals just having the most, I think, irrelevant offseason of anyone. They're paying bad offensive linemen, and it's Andy Dalton, I guess, is going to be back, and they couldn't get anybody to be their DC forever. Like, it's a very sad state of affairs in Cincinnati, I feel like. But it's amazing that we're here. Who do you think right now that you've monitored is losing free agency? Who have you just been like, what the hell are you doing?
You know, I don't know if I would say what the hell are they doing, but Baltimore certainly seems to have lost a lot of ground. I know some of those players were defensively interested in leaving and migrating to a team with a better offense. They were concerned they weren't going to be able to move the ball without Joe Flacco there. And so I think that there's definitely some concerns there. So I think that Baltimore has to be on that list. You've already mentioned Cincinnati. That's kind of a head scratcher, you know, in terms of what are you doing? You know, Kansas City's let a lot of talent migrate, and they're switching defensive styles. So that's, you know, that's kind of interesting to kind of keep an eye on as they prepare for, you know, Pat Mahomes going into year three, year two as a starter. But, you know, you've probably only got this year, next year in terms of his cheap contract, and you're going to have to fifth year option him and then, you know, offer an all world deal. So, you know, Kansas City's window is shrinking, and hemorrhaging defensive talent on a unit that was the Achilles heel of that team doesn't really seem to me to be the way to go.
Yeah. Kansas City, there's a lot of question marks, especially on that defense, but the Baltimore stuff is fascinating too, because I mean, it's hard to rip them when they ended up with Earl Thomas so far. And, I don't love their receiving core right now. I don't love that they're not seeming to surround Lamar with a whole lot right now. We'll have to see what happens. I think it's going to be a very tight and heavy group where they have Mark Andrews still, they have Hayden Hurst, they have guys, Nick Boyle, like they're going to, I think, just run the ball down people's throats and just rarely air it out and just go to Willie Snead whenever they need to big time. But I don't know. I'm kind of a little concerned what they're doing with that offense. But when was the last time you remember like the Ravens just not having a linebacker that you knew off the top of your head? Like Chris Board, Patrick Onuwasar, who I don't even know who that is slated right now, start wide linebacker or weak side linebacker, and then Matt Judon. Like it's weird, right? Like this never happens, but I love their secondary, but it's just weird that the Ravens have this kind of just invisible linebacking core, because it's just been like a staple of me just always kind of having an idea of where they are, and Terrell Suggs just being gone is weird.
Yeah, I think Colin Sewer's going to be, he's a pretty good linebacker. Saw him play quite a bit last year. Judon's a great pass rusher. The other side's really kind of concerning, but otherwise, you know, I mean, it certainly is a revamped team from what Ozzie Newsome ran. And then on the offensive side of the ball, the tight ends and stuff, you know, what are they going to run, five personnel out there or something?
I wouldn't roll it out.
it's just an interesting thing. Obviously, they're trying to go two tight end sets. They want to go heavy because that's going to force defenses to go heavy. And then what you do at that point is you take advantage of Lamar's athleticism, being able to get outside on those heavier looks. So they're going to want to be a power run team. And, you know, a lot of it hinges on Lamar's development as a quarterback. And I'll tell you, some of those defensive players left because they did not believe in his ability to do that.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm rooting for him because ultimately Lamar is fun, and if he is good, the NFL is better, because if he's running around doing crazy stuff, it's like the Mahomes factor. Different guys, obviously, but there is just nothing is tantalizing in sports, I don't think, than a just ridiculously fun quarterback. Like when a quarterback is just on, and when Lamar is on, when Mahomes is on, it's just you can't look away.
Yeah, and I think that that's good. You know, I'm always rooting for everybody. I don't root against anybody. But, you know, I think that it was interesting, some private commentary, you know, that came out of all that was that they were, you know, they went ahead and went other directions because they felt like that the defense was going to have to carry the team again, and that wasn't really replicable. And if you look at, you know, kind of modern history, there's some proof to that. You know, if a defense gets hot for a year and plays well, they can carry a team. But generally, they can't carry a team 2 or 3 years. You know, if you look Denver after their Super Bowl, the defense was still good, but the offense fell off. You know, you look at Seattle, you know, they're back and forth between offense and defense. You could look in recent years at great defense at the Jaguars, for instance. The defense carried the team for 2 years and they just couldn't do it anymore. Defenses fall apart pretty quick. So I think those
guys
recognized
last year.
Right. And I think those guys recognized that and recognized that, you know, it was time to, you know, to kind of move on and cash in and you kind of see some of that.
The thing about that, though, which is so strange, is like of all teams for defenders to be like, I don't know if this is for us having to carry this team. Like, they won a Super Bowl at Trent Dilfer. This is a franchise that is known for their defense just doing it every single year. And like, what have you enjoyed about Joe Flacco being your quarterback for the last 3 to 4 years? Like, how is Lamar Jackson really going to be more of a thorn in your side than what Joe Flacco has been? I do wonder about that, where it's like, are you sure it can be worse? Are you sure you're going to be asked to do more than what you've had to do with Joe Flacco the last couple of years?
Well, right. And Flacco, you know, for all the jokes and all that kind of stuff, in the end, he's certainly a serviceable starting quarterback in the league. Lamar didn't really look like one most of the time. There were some throws that were great, and you hope that that becomes more replicable as, you know, as he gets more reps. But he was stymied several games late in the season, and the Chargers really kind of laid the blueprint out on how to stop him. So, you know, we'll see. I think that having a young dynamic quarterback is always good for the league, but I don't know that, you know, I don't know that he's going to evolve into what he needs to evolve into anytime soon.
Yeah. But they have the right offensive coordinator for him, the Kaepernick coordinator with
Roman
now taking over. Yeah. Like, they're at least going about it the right way, where they're going to give, if Lamar is going to succeed, like, they're doing everything possible to surround him with the right personnel and the right group to help him succeed. Like, I think at the very least, if he fails, it's like, I mean, they did everything they possibly could to ensure your success. So that's always a good thing. Speaking of quarterbacks, is there a quarterback that you find, or that you have found rather, to be very interesting based on where their new team is going to be in 2019? Is there any quarterback movement where you're like, oh, you know what? I kind of like this. This could be fun.
I'm kind of interested to see Joe Flacco with Rick Scandarello. Scandarello is a Kubiak kind of disciple, and you know, he's got experience at the collegiate ranks. The only reason anybody in the NFL ever knew who JT O'Sullivan was because of him. And so, you know, he's got some kind of experience, and I'm interested to see that combination. Flacco's best year came under Kubiak in Baltimore. So running, you know, a semblance of the same system with that, you know, zone run to boot action stuff, which is Flacco's strength, will be interesting. Kind of interested to see if he can elevate that offense and, you know, how those receivers or that young receiving corps is going to perform in its second year. You got Cortland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, Tim Patrick, and then you get Emmanuel Sanders back off injury. The Broncos, you know, they got Philip Lindsay back there in the backfield. All of a sudden, that offense kind of looks like it's got some players. So it'll be interesting to see if Joe can kind of return to form.
I was going to bring up the Broncos because I know this is a team you're very familiar with. And the OC hire was intriguing, especially because of the weird Kubiak stuff this offseason that I'm sure you're pretty plugged in on, and like why that was all weird. And then like how Scangarello came to Denver anyway, and just the opportunity to be an OC and all this other stuff. And like you said, he has a very long list of collegiate stops on his coaching resume. But the thing about them, when I was going through their depth chart and I was thinking about this Broncos team going into next year, because we've kind of penciled in the Chiefs and the Chargers, is like they're still just going to be the two elite teams in that division. But there is some, it kind of reminds me of the NFC North last year, where we all just assumed that the Packers and the Vikings were going to be in the playoffs again. And that if Aaron Rodgers is healthy and Kirk Cousins being the guy and that defense is too good and all this, that and the other, and they would get back in. And that obviously wasn't the case. And the Bears snuck in. And I think they're kind of now going to try and do the Bears blueprint, just a little inverted, where they have Vic Fangio. So they, like, the Broncos having a top 10 defensive DVOA defense next year should probably be assumed. So that's a good thing. And then you have this offensive line coach that you brought in with Mike Munchak, who may be the most underrated hire of the offseason, I think, just because of how good that dude is, and just prying him away from Pittsburgh is just such a huge thing for them. And because the Broncos just haven't had, like, the offensive line has not been a position of strength for them in the Mile High City. You correct me if I'm wrong, but it has not been a staple for years now, good offensive line play.
And, no, it really hasn't. It's been bad since Alex Gibbs left. So,
right.
You know, that's one of the things they're focusing on as an area of improvement.
So you have that, and it turns out, like, having a great offensive line when you have Philip Lindsay and guys like that and Royce Freeman still, like, if you build that identity and you build this kind of team that way, you can afford to have kind of an average quarterback, because suddenly everything else is really good. And if you have a great defense, an elite defense, and you have the pass rushers, like, you have your Khalil Mack and Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, and you have all these pieces that are just like, oh, huh, this can turn around very quickly. And I don't know. I feel like there is some real Broncos being the 2018 Bears potential. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, I would say there's some truth to that. A lot of that will depend on what they do in the draft. The Broncos' inside linebackers are not very athletic, and that's going to be a problem. They need some more depth at corner. Strong safety is still a question mark, whether or not Will Parks or Stuart Craven is going to step up there. They don't really have a true zero tech nose tackle. And then the right guard position is completely unsettled. They've got Elijah Wilkinson, who played tackle last year, penciled in there as McGovern slides over to center. So there's a lot of question marks. But the potential is there. There are good players. That defense was still good, even if Vance Joseph wasted it playing cover zero all the time. I think that, I think the Broncos could be okay. I think they're probably a 500 team, depending on the draft. I think they're going to surprise some people, be a spoiler at times. Then they're going to lose some boneheaded ones as well.
How real is the Drew Lock and John Elway love connection?
They like him. If he's there at 10, that would present an interesting choice for them. They also like Devin Bush, Devin White. So they're going to have to, kind of make some choices. I don't think Devin White's going to make it there. I think the worst kept secret of the draft is that he's going to go number 5 to Tampa. So, I think that, when you look at 10, you got to say, okay, do we like Locke? Do we love Locke? Is he here? And he may not be. Everybody I've talked to says, Miami, Detroit, even the Raiders all looking him over as well. So Washington could even get involved there too. Locke and then Bush, inside linebacker position in need. Bush is a guy you could probably trade back from 10 and still pick up a few picks later. So if a team like Miami wanted to come up and get their quarterback, you could swap spots, pick up a draft pick, and then still get your guy a few picks later. So, I think that's kind of the conundrum that they're looking at. Those are the positions the players are really looking at. And they're going to bring some quarterbacks in for pre-draft visits, but it's a like. I don't know that it's a lock, no pun intended.
where do you think they ultimately go? Where is your gut telling you they go at 10?
Well, again, I think a lot of that depends on
Let's say
there.
White and Locke are available.
White and Locke were available, then it would be White. Okay. White's not going to be there, though. I'm just going to tell you, he's not. So, it really is down to, like, Locke, Bush, and a trade back, and that just depends. What's the offer to come up, and do we value the quarterback versus the inside linebacker and what we're going to do, and, those kinds of things. So I would suggest those are the three scenarios.
I have a question. Do you have Will Grier ahead of Drew Locke in your evaluations or no?
I am significantly lower on Will Grier than a lot of people. Apparently,
yeah,
I don't.
I'm
the Broncos already
what's,
had
what,
Case
what,
Keenum.
What? Oh, so you see a lot of Case Keenum and Will Grier?
Yeah, same offense, same guy, same age, same pluses, same minuses. Keenum was more athletic than Grier, but overall they're pretty much the same guy. Grier throws the ball a touch harder, but that's about it. They're not really. Will Grier is, to me, is wildly overrated. I don't understand the fascination there, other than he put up some big numbers. You go back and watch the tape. He had great receivers. They had a talent advantage most of the time, and then whenever he played any semblance of a defense, he pretty much folded.
Why do you think Keenum struggled so much in Denver last year? I thought he'd be better.
They weren't playing to his strengths. You know, Keenum is one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL off play action, and the Broncos barely used it. You know, you need to be a zone run and set up the play action guy with Keenum if that's what you're going to be, and have him play within himself. And instead, they're trying to throw the ball up the seam on first down, and, you know, just Bill Musgrave's offense was not a fit for him at all, and they tried to put a square peg in a round hole. And, you know, when they shifted the offense in the middle of the season to do more of that, all of a sudden Philip Lindsay took off and was running gangbusters, and Case Keenum had a six-game run there where he was playing great. So, and then they went back to what they were doing before and lost a bunch of games. So, you know, it's just a question of arrogance in the coaching, trying to make a guy fit your scheme rather than tailor your scheme to fit his strengths.
So let's talk about the other AFC West team that I think we're all very interested in, how they're going to perform prior to their move to Vegas, Oakland. Are you surprised at all on how they've operated this offseason?
Not really. You know, John Gruden and Mike Mayock wanted to be aggressive. They were initially hoping to put together kind of a triumvirate where they wind up with Antonio Brown at receiver, and they got him, and then Le'Veon Bell at running back, and they were in the mix for him, but ultimately didn't pull it off. And then, you know, draft Kyler Murray and really have kind of a, you know, a whole new offense. I don't think they're going to wind up with Kyler Murray. And I think that situation, you know, that original plan has kind of melted along the way, but that's kind of an interesting or exciting, I guess, kind of, you know, offense they were trying to put together. You know, I think they're going to be all right. They've got a couple of good receivers. I think the real steal wasn't Brown. I think it's Tyrell Williams, you know, get him. So that's, you know, that vertical threat when they want to go vertical. He's, you know, he's a guy that's really tough to cover and one of the more unheralded receivers out there. And I think he's going to put up big numbers.
So he's not like the Porter signing from years ago. Do you remember that dude? It wasn't Joey Porter. Who was the number 84?
Jerry Porter.
There it was. Yes. He had the look of a superstar receiver. He was huge, long, and everything, and just, and he sucked. That was my first thought with the Tyrell Williams stuff.
Yeah, with Porter, he was always a guy that, you know, in Oakland was matched up against number three corners. And so when you had Tim Brown and Jerry Rice pulling your one and twos, Porter tended to be open a lot because that third corner usually wasn't very good. I mean, again, this is back in the early 2000s when, you know, nickel wasn't base yet, you know, until around 2006. So it's kind of predated that. So when you went three wide, you had a talent advantage. And the problem was when Porter started going up against ones and twos, obviously he wasn't the same guy. And, you know, and he got shut down.
So you're not worried about that with Tyrell Williams at all?
No, Williams went up against ones and twos last year, and he was just fine. I think he's going to be a monster. I think people are underrating him.
Okay. Well, that's good news for the Raiders. Do you think if Jameis Winston had become available that John Gruden would have done whatever it took to get him?
No, I don't think he would have been interested in him at all.
Interesting. Why was that a thing? Why did we all assume that he loved Jameis Winston and that was something that could possibly happen?
Because John lived down there in Tampa or something. I don't know. I can tell you from personal experience that would not have been something that would have happened. John Gruden, a quarterback in a John Gruden offense, it doesn't need to be a big arm guy. He needs to be efficient with the football. The ideal quarterback for John Gruden is Alex Smith. You know, a guy who's efficient, distributes the football, lets the receivers make the plays after the catch. And, you know, it doesn't turn the football over. So that's why he's brought in guys like A.J. McCarron that kind of fit that same mold. You know, that
Derek Carr's kind of that, right? Mr. Conservative.
Carr is a pretty big arm. They just play him conservatively. He's been aggressive before. He was actually, we talked about Bill Musgrave and the arrogance. He was actually the guy who fit best with Bill Musgrave, a guy who could stretch the field vertically on first down. And then, you know, you run it on second, then you figure out what you're doing on third. You know, as Carter, it doesn't have to be conservative. He just kind of has been because that's the way he's been coached since, you know, the Todd Downing debacle. And then, you know, Gruden wanting your quarterback, his big thing is just don't turn it over. So, you know, I think that if you look, a guy like Case Keenum or a guy like Alex Smith or, you know, somebody Matt Ryan are ideal Gruden quarterbacks for what they run.
Interesting. Man, that's surprising. I hadn't really considered that, but it makes more sense when you think about like the Brad Johnson years and the Jeff Christie's and everything going through. Yeah, that makes sense. How did they win the draft? What did they do in the first three rounds where we look back 5 years from now and they're like, holy shit, Oakland, Mayock. They did it. They created their new draft superstars. That was the draft that we all look back on of like, how did they pull this off? What did they do?
I think you need to get a plus on the defensive side of the football. You need to get an elite player at each level. You need to get one more elite defensive lineman, whether that's Quinton Williams or Bosa or Allen, whoever's there. You need to get one linebacker. It just depends on who's there. And I think you need to get one elite corner. And I think that they've got a decent shot at a Greedy or a Byron Murphy falling to them. One or the other, they could kind of snap something like that up. I think that they can get that defensive lineman first, get that corner second, get that linebacker third, and put a brilliant young player at each level of that defense. And I think that they're going to be in really good shape.
Okay. Do you think they do that? Do you think that's how they operate in the draft for the first three rounds?
Yeah. They made no secret of the fact that they were going to buy an offense and build a defense. And I think that plan is still holding true.
Is that how you would have approach it if you're Oakland?
Given what they have, I think that's probably a smart move, especially considering the strengths and weaknesses of that coaching staff. John Gruden's always been a guy who succeeded by bringing in veteran offensive players that had a savvy. They didn't have to be the most talented athletes. They just kind of had to be savvy and smart. If you look at Oakland, as his best years were with recycled Rich Gannon and then bringing in Jerry Rice to pair with Tim Brown, and doing things that way. And then you go down there to Tampa and bringing in Brad Johnson and then Keyshawn Johnson and Keaton McCardell and that whole setup. So that's always kind of been Gruden's key of success was veteran savvy receivers that didn't have to be all world athletes, just guys that were kind of strong and, could get you a couple yards after the catch and a quarterback that was kind of a point guard to distribute the ball. And, I think they've done well with that.
So I want to throw a couple quick things at you, then we can wrap up here. Less likely, because this is something we don't think about. We just pencil teams back into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl contention window, all that kind of stuff. Who do you think is less likely to get back to the NFC Championship game next year, the Rams or the Saints?
I would say the Rams. Okay. The blueprint on how to stop the Rams is kind of out there. Vic Fangio and the Bears actually laid it out, and then the Patriots kind of covered it in the Super Bowl. And if you look at against those two teams, they really struggled. That cutback zone wasn't there, and they fooled the quarterback with that kind of 4-0-4 technique on the defensive line. And they did bring all the linebackers up, to the line, so it looked like you were running a 52 defense, a 5-2, and then you drop the linebackers back into coverage or bring one off the edge and just kind of adjust. And that cutback zone stuff, they knew how to plug that with the linebacker one gap in there. So, I think that the blueprint is out on how to beat the Rams, and Sean McVay and the quote unquote wizardry and all that kind of stuff is going to have to evolve a little bit. We'll see. For a guy with as great a memory as he has, you would think seeing the same looks from the Patriots as you saw from the Bears, you'd shake things up, and they just didn't do it.
Yeah, I probably agree with you. I think especially with Breeze back, and I do trust Sean Payton more with how much he's adjusted over the years. And I don't know what the blueprint is to stop Michael Thomas from getting the football. It turns out just targeting him 18 times a game is very worthwhile, and Alvin Kamara and everything else. Last thing on the Saints. What are the chances Teddy Bridgewater is the starter in New Orleans in 2020?
I would say better than average. I mean, he's going to have to beat out Taysom Hill, who's making his case as an all-world athlete too. I wasn't that impressed with Teddy's play when he came into that game. With the Saints, it's good to see him back out there, but I wasn't very impressed. We'll see. I would say about average.
Okay. Do you think the national media is being a little too harsh on what the New York Giants are doing this offseason?
No, and I don't think they were harsh enough last year. I think that, force feeding Saquon Barkley put those raw numbers pretty high, but his per touch stuff wasn't all that great, relatively speaking. A lot of yards from scrimmage because they kept force feeding him. And, I think that if you're going to do that, eventually he's going to wear down. We saw that with Ty Gurley in year two, with Jeff Fisher's offense, the force feeding him, and he kind of wore down, wasn't the same, and then it took an injury, and then getting the year off and then coming back, at least some of the season off. I don't know what the Giants are doing. I really don't. Dave Gettleman's always been a guy that you know, he always kind of struggled to get the NFL, I think, in terms of what you needed to do. And he just has this rigid philosophy that you go out and you build the trenches. Well, that's a nice cliche thing to say, and you do want to do that, obviously. But, you know, I don't know that overall his inflexibility in the draft, he had offers on the table for number two, and he could have gotten Saquon Barkley.
Yes.
You know, he had offers for number two because people were coming up trying to get Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
The Broncos wanted to come up from five. And he just said no. And so this inflexibility, this inability to adjust and maximize the value of your assets really has, you know, I think hindered him. And you look at all the trading and everything, you know, what he got out of the Beckham and Olivier Vernon deals. Basically, he got a guard and some draft picks. And I don't know that that's – I just don't know that that's enough value for an all-world receiver like Odell Beckham.
It's just like the Saquon stuff you can't get over, and like by the time the Giants, if they ever get back there, where they get back to competing for the NFC title games picture, Saquon's gonna be, he might be in the Todd Gurley zone now with tendonitis in his knees, and he's just banged up, and it's too late. So it was like, what was the point? Like, you could have just, man, that's wild. Would the Broncos have taken Darnold if they had been able to trip too?
Yes. They had three players ranked as top five players. They're in the draft plan last year. They tried to get up to get one of the quarterbacks, and they were unable to do so. But they had Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and Bradley Chubb as the only three players worth the top five pick. And so if none of them had been there, they had a trade agreed to with Buffalo where they were going to trade back so Buffalo could get up and get Josh Allen. And so when Bradley Chubb fell on their lap because they did not expect the Browns to take Ward at four, they wound up, you know, having Chubb fall on their lap. They canceled the trade and took Bradley Chubb instead.
What do evaluators around the league think of Josh Allen right now?
It's a mixed bag. You know, I talked to people who laughed at the notion of him going in the first round. I talked to people who think he could be the next Matt Stafford. Certainly he's got the legs, you know, he's got the thick body. He did, his receivers and his offensive line didn't do him any favors last year. We saw some flashes, but we also saw a lot of, you know, I watched him sail a swing pass 20 yards off target. So it's, you know, I think that he, like Lamar Jackson, has deficiencies he needs to work on. I don't know if, you know, there's a lot of potential for both of them. I don't know if he ever gets there.
Yeah. If you had to rank the futures of that big four, how would you rank them going forward?
Baker number one, Darnold number two, Rosen number three, Allen number four, Jackson number five.
Okay, so you're still buying the Rosen stuff. It's so hard because he had like a 43% pressure rate last year. It was something absurd when you have Justin Pugh and Andre Smith and just the absolute dog shit that he had in front of him. It was the worst case scenario of like any rookie quarterback in a really long time. But
right. They had fifth and six stringers on that line at times, block, and it was terrible. And then, you know, outside of Larry Fitzgerald, nothing to throw to either. I don't know if he's going to get a shot in Arizona, if they're going to go to the draft. Everybody seems to be assuming that, but, you know, if he does, you know, there's some teams that would be interested. The Chargers are need a successor to Phillip Rivers. They've been, you know, sniffing around quarterbacks in the draft last couple of years. That might be the direction to go. So, and that would make a lot of sense getting that Rosen back to LA as well, you know, where he's kind of comfortable.
So what team would you like to see Rosen get traded to the most?
Well, the Chargers. I mean, you know, someplace where he can go learn a couple of years and then take over and succeed. Yeah, and succeed, a guy who's a veteran like Rivers. I think it'd get along well. He's got that personality that they like, as the, you know, the Chargers like a quarterback, a kind of obnoxious, brash personality, but, can be a guy that can get things done.
Something tells me Josh Rosen and Phillip Rivers might be a little different on the political spectrum.
Well, right. I mean, they're probably polar opposites. But Phil Rivers, the guy, it's, you know, for all the jokes everybody makes about him, he's actually a really nice guy. You know, he plays kind of the heel on the field.
Does he? I think he's likable. I think we all like him. Who doesn't like Phil Rivers?
You know, I like him, but there's some people don't like his, you know, his attitude. They think he whines and this sort of stuff. And I just feel bad for him. Yeah.
Like, I had the Chargers in the Super Bowl this past year, and it sucked seeing what happened. Like, it felt like a funeral watching what happened to the Chargers in the Pats game. It was just brutal. I hated it. I just like, this was it. I've been waiting on this Chargers team forever, and I hated how Anthony Lynn got treated with a lot of stuff, and I just thought that that group was great, and they just made sense, and it was like, it was cool to see a team with that much talent do stuff, and I just want Phillip Rivers to have some playoff success. It seems insane that Eli Manning's going to retire with two rings, and Phillip Rivers is going to have zero, and it's weird.
The ball bounced. I mean, Marlon McCree, and you probably would see it.
Yeah, I would like to see Rosen go somewhere like Washington. I think Washington. I want to see Washington and Jacksonville just keep throwing shit at the board with quarterback. I don't think there is, like, teams just get like, well, we have the guy. Well, no, maybe you don't. Like, if I was the Bears, I would consider, okay, what quarterbacks might be available at the end of the first? I don't know if I've seen enough from Trubisky where, like, there's nothing wrong with just keep, unless you know you have a top 10 guy, keep taking shots. That's why I'm okay with Arizona taking Kyler Murray. Like, I don't know. I think it's, I would love to see Rosen in something like that. Let's see a team get really weird.
You know, it's possible. I don't think Washington, I mean, Washington knows that, you know, this is Jay Gruden's last year unless something miraculous happens. So I don't think they're going to do
really?
That. They don't want to saddle the next coach with, you know, with a quarterback that he doesn't want. So I think they're going to roll with Case and, you know, try to continue to build the other areas. And ideally, the next coach will kind of pick his quarterback.
Well, let's just go ahead and say, like, that's the best college quarterback room of all time, right? Like, getting Alex Smith, Case Keenum, and Colt McCoy in the same quarterback room, is that not just, like, one of the craziest just thinking about those three and what they were in college. And
well, don't forget Josh Johnson either. You know, he was really good at San Diego State. That's what made John Harbaugh, got him the Stanford job.
That's right. God, what a college. I mean, and also, like, Alex Smith, Case Keenum, and Colt McCoy and Josh Johnson seem like the most likable dudes of all time, and they play for such a terrible franchise. I don't know. They all seem like great people. Did you read the Keenum book?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I've got an autographed copy of it.
Okay. Is it worth it? It's on my Amazon wish list, and I haven't decided if I want.
It is what it is. If you like books like that, you'll like that one. That's the best way to put that.
Okay. I don't know. Guys like Keenum are interesting to me. All right. I think we're about good to wrap up here. Last thing, and then we'll go. How about this? Last thing, then we'll go. We talked about the AFC South a little bit. We talked about the NFC North a little bit. These are the two divisions outside of the rest of the league where I still can go either way, 1 through 4. And I think that's a rarity across the league. How would you rank the top four going into next year? If you had to guess, we still have the draft and other stuff to go. But if you had to, where do you think the things are going with the top four in both divisions there?
Which you want the top four in the AFC and the top four in the NFC?
AFC South and the NFC North.
Oh, the AFC South, I think the Colts are, I think the Colts are the cream of the crop. I think they're going to be very good. They'll continue
even if Deshaun Watson plays like 16 games.
Even if he does. Deshaun Watson, okay. You know, he's hit or miss. He got kind of exposed when Will Fuller was out. He needs a burner to stretch the field vertically in order to open up those windows because he doesn't have the biggest arm or the best velocity. In fact, he's got one of the highest interception rates in the NFL since he's come into the league. But when he had Fuller was so fast, he just blew by guys and was wide open. Plus, you got Nuke Hopkins, who I think is probably the number one or two or three receiver in the game, depending on your, where you live. You know, that's what with Bill O'Brien there limiting that offense, their reticence to rely on the run game and defense starting to show some cracks. I think that, I don't know that I would pick Houston. Jacksonville looks like a mess. They're going to regress to the mean. Tennessee, they got another offensive coordinator change. They bring in Tannehill to be the backup. I don't know that Mariota's the guy. I think that's a team that could be good defensively, but it just struggles offensively, and I don't think they have the right offense or the right personnel.
Yeah, Mariota is like one of those dudes. If he wasn't selected, if you didn't know anything about his college career, you didn't know where he was drafted, you would have watched last year and been like, why is this dude considered a franchise quarterback? There's something about it where he is a beneficiary of his past and where he was drafted. I think some guys they stand out in that way. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I think that, at the time he was drafted, the Chip Kelly offense in the NFL was all the rage. Right. You know, it's funny how things shift, but you know, so there was a lot to that. I think that hell, that quarterback draft class was very good. Everybody kept talking about it being great with Winston and then Mariota there at the top. And you know, Winston, this reminds me a lot of Jay Cutler, and you know, Mariota reminded me a lot of Alex Smith. And I think that in the end, I think that's kind of what they became.
Yeah, I just, with the AFC South, I'm right there with you, the Titans and the Jags, but I do think the Texans, if they're all healthy, I wish they had signed Le'Veon Bell. That's where I wanted him to go, because if you just doubled down in that offense, he would have been perfect.
Well, but they would have never used him. They got Lamar Miller, and they'll use him.
I know. That's so, the thing. So it's like they have this. They should use these guys. They should be playing. Bill O'Brien, what are you doing, my guy? Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. And then the NFC North. I love what the Lions are doing. I'm talking myself into them like an idiot, but I don't know. I could see the NFC North going any which way. Like, because I could see the Vikings bouncing back. I could see them falling off even worse. I could see the Packers going through some weird stuff. Like, I haven't decided on where any of those four teams are going to end up next year.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a regression from the Packers. I don't like what they're doing. I think they got the wrong guy, and you know, LaFleur is, you know, another McVay guy. I don't know. We'll see. I think the Packers are going to regress, though. I think Aaron Rodgers is getting older, and that's not going to help. You know, I think the Vikings are going to bounce back a little bit. You know, I think you'll see Mike Zimmer's a good coach, and I think you'll see them bounce back. The Lions, I don't know. There's a lot of talk around the league. They're looking to make a change at quarterback. You could see something that, you know, maybe they draft a guy and run out the clock on Stafford's contract. You know, I don't know.
Would he have any value on the trade market? Would any team?
Oh, yeah. Broncos would be tripping over themselves to get to him.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, there's. We'll see. The problem is the dead cap hit is astronomical. So, you know, I don't know how realistic that is, but there's talk about that. I think the Vikings about that bounce back. And then the Trubisky, it really just, you know, how well he grows. Cause if he's not the guy, then, you know, they'll be back to the drawing board. That defense, you know, like I said, you can sustain defensive excellence for a couple of years, 3-4 year windows, but and they've been good for, you know, for two or three. So
lost Fangio. They have John. I mean, right. We'll see what Pagano does, but he's an easily likable dude. But I don't know. Fangio is just, he's a mastermind. And going from him to Pagano, who was out of the league for a year, I could see it going on really badly for the Bears really quickly.
Yeah, it's a possibility. So I think Minnesota's probably going to have a bounce back. They'll be the team to beat.
The Minnesota stuff just sucks because it was an uncomfortable thing to talk about with Tony Sparano. Like that, just how important he was to that O-line, and just all the circumstances surrounding all that just sucks. And you just kind of wonder how much of a factor that played into a lot of stuff there. But I don't know. The Vikings, we'll see. They're great fans. Shout out to Eric Thompson and everybody else, but I like it when they're good. But it should be interesting to see how it all unfolds. Ben, this has been great. I really do appreciate you taking the time tonight. We can find you on Twitter at AlbrightNFL. Is there anything you would like to plug before we get out of here?
No, I think we're good.
All right, man. I really do appreciate it. This was great.
No problem. Take care.
And that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I just want to remind you guys, if you like today's episode and you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, I would really appreciate if you could take a second, leave the show a 5-star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple Podcast listener, remember you can find the show on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Be sure to check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can access all of my previous episodes and also find all my writing. I'm writing there fairly often. And also follow me on Twitter at @Chase_Thomas and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Thank you for your support, and we'll be back with another episode very soon. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.